Maybe our grandparents and great-grandparents never even thought about how well they liked themselves. Life was harder back in their time, and just getting through the day could take an effort. Nowadays, we can think about concepts like self-esteem, or the lack of it. That's the zone in which today's guest possesses some expertise. Annalee Rufus was not her own biggest fan for a long stretch of her life. She writes about how she and other people with low self-esteem got there and how they get back in her book, Unworthy: How to Stop Hating Yourself. Annalee Rufus is a widely published journalist with several awards to her credit. She's the author of 11 books, including Party of One, The Loner's Manifesto. Annalee, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jeff. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. Is Unworthy something like a sequel to Party of One?
Exactly not.
Really?
I think a lot of people make the mistake if they were Party of One fans and got into the idea of being a loner as something that's okay. If those people, my Party of One fans, would then see Unworthy, a book about low self-esteem, they might jump to the conclusion that I am a loner because I have low self-esteem, and that low self-esteem drove me into solitude, when in fact it's quite the opposite, and that this is kind of a minor point in the book, but I am a born introvert, as a lot of people are, but because this aspect of me worried the adults in my life, I was forced into a lot of social activities as a young person, you know, campfire girls and guitar class and youth groups, which made me have to fake it a lot and feel like a freak and be treated like a freak because I didn't want to be in these social places. And you're told enough times as a young person that you're a freak, you believe it, and here comes your low self-esteem.
So you were made to be a joiner when you were anything but, or were anything but anyway.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people's low self-esteem starts early in life when they are basically forced to sell themselves out or forced to deny their true selves or their true desires or some aspects of themselves that the people around them do not accept, will not accept.
Is it too strong a word to say you spent years hating yourself? Is hate too strong?
That's not too strong, and that's why it's in the subtitle, How to Stop Hating Yourself, because it comes to that. I see self-esteem as inhabiting a spectrum, and at one side of it is this abject, suicidal self-loathing, and at the other side is this kind of what I call dictatorial narcissism, people who love themselves so much that they've got a problem. And my goal in Unworthy and in life is somewhere in the middle, this kind of mellow mid-range of self-acceptance, self-compassion, where you're just not so self-absorbed. The problem with both extreme ends of the self-esteem spectrum is that they are different forms of self-absorption. One of them is a positive narcissism, and one of them is what I call a negative narcissism. But in the middle, we're able to think about things besides ourselves.
So it becomes other-directed, not just self-directed.
Yeah, which I think is really healthy and a lot more interesting, less painful.
Right, absolutely. You give us quite a string of examples of people with low self-esteem, names we've heard of, including, as the final example, Mariah Carey, with 200 awards to her name, which kind of brings about a chuckle. Your writing can be very funny at times, despite the subject matter.
Thank you.
At this point in your life, Annalee, how do you react to such anecdotes? Like, come on, you're one of the most famous people in the world. You've got 200 awards for your singing, and you don't have self-esteem?
I always marvel at this, but then I have to stop and say, you know, self-esteem, the whole point about self-esteem is that it isn't really tagged to a person's actual qualities. You see extremely smart, extremely talented, extremely beautiful people who will tell you in interviews that they really struggle with low self-esteem. You have someone like Nicole Scherzinger, who was in the Pussycat Dolls and considered one of the most beautiful, sexy women in the world for many years. Now she's telling Vogue magazine that she was bulimic for most of those years because she hated her body. Well, okay, what can we say about that? But at the same time, often you'll see a person that you might consider a bad person, a criminal, for example, on TV, and that person clearly does not have a self-esteem problem and loves himself. So it's not related to reality. That's the sad thing for people with low self-esteem, and that I always try to tell them is your low self-esteem is not reality-based. Once we can accept that, I think it's a huge step.
I want to follow that path just a little bit further into prison, because there is a little bit more in the book about that. But what's the quote that if you want to look at a place with people full of self-esteem, it's prison?
That is a quote from Theodore Dalrymple, who is a longtime prison doctor. And he comes out and says that, and I know it's not very PC, but he has worked there, so he knows some of the most confident, self-loving people he's ever seen are complete criminals, you know, convicted, admitted criminals in jail. So what does that tell us who, let's say, hate ourselves or really dislike ourselves? One thing that I've found pretty useful, I mean, scientific studies have shown that affirmations, I love myself, I'm beautiful, don't actually work for people with really low self-esteem, because to us it feels too extreme. It feels like a lie, and telling lies makes us hate ourselves more. So for me, instead of that kind of affirmation, what actually works is, hey, I'm not a murderer. I'm not an armed robber. I didn't burn down a library today. And these little things are positive qualities we can embrace.
All right, so I definitely accentuate the positive, and not being in prison is a big one. The book is called Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. Anna Lee Rufus wrote it. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll pick up the discussion with Anna Lee, and you can join us as well on the Exchange. Back with Anna Lee Rufus and your phone calls and emails on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Anna Lee Rufus, an award-winning journalist, several books to her credit. And her latest is called Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. It's about her own journey from the depths of low self-esteem into a better place and how other people can make that same journey. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I guess it shouldn't surprise anybody, Anna Lee, there are actually low self-esteem light bulb jokes.
Are there? You tell me.
Yes.
Wait. Did I make one up? I know one. I put a few low self-esteem jokes in the book, and I will tell you the truth. The manuscript was very, very dark when I first submitted it, and various people on the editorial team said, you have to lighten this up, because although the information is useful, people are going to get even more depressed. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll put some low self-esteem jokes in there that people with low self-esteem will actually get. You know, and one of them is, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who's there? It's me. You know, go to hell or something. I don't have it in front of me. But it's like, yeah, exactly. Guy walks into a bar. Bartender says, what do you have? Oh, guy with low self-esteem walks into a bar. Bartender says, what do you have? Guy with low self-esteem says, I don't know. How the heck would I know? Because one of the main characteristics, there's some kind of dead giveaways, habits that people with low self-esteem tend to share. And I talk about these a lot in the book because I think a lot of us don't even realize that we have them, that they're habits, that we don't need to keep them, and that they, most importantly, come from our low self-esteem. One of these bad habits is we find it very difficult to make choices. From something as simple as choosing a thing off a menu to something more difficult as where am I going to live, what am I going to do, who do I want to be with? Because any choice we make, we're pretty sure we're going to regret. So we hesitate and hesitate because we know that feeling of regret and we're afraid to go there. So we will stand there staring at the menu or something more important and not be able to choose. More confident people can do it because they can roll with, you know what, so what? You make a wrong choice, you learn from it. People with low self-esteem are so afraid of that feeling of, I screwed up again, I hate myself, that we basically grew up again by not choosing, and that's just one of many habits. Other ones are we tend to fake it a lot and then hate ourselves for faking it and turn everything into a performance. We tend to apologize compulsively. Just if you bump into me and spill coffee on me, I will apologize to you. I was clumsy. I was in your way. I mean, so many of these things that we do, once we realize what they are and where they come from and start with that self-awareness, I think we can get ourselves on the road to recovery.
I have to wonder if people with low self-esteem are somewhat fatalistic, because the lack of decision-making and choices would seem to indicate that they're afraid of being stuck with that choice forever and ever.
I think it's a more instant thing. They're afraid of that gut feeling of, I screwed up. And it's much easier to let others do the choosing, because another one of our qualities that we share is aiming to please. Now, people with low self-esteem, in a sense, can be very easy to get along with, because we will let you win and we will step aside and let you choose for us. And we might resent you, we might not like what you chose, but it's a lot easier than the instantaneous stab of suffering that we are going to feel if we choose pistachio and think, damn it, I should have chosen French vanilla. Or if we choose to go to Mexico and we think, damn it, I should have gone to Kazakhstan. I mean, we would rather avoid that, and so we will let others make our choices for us.
The apologies part is the one that is a little... well, I mean, none of these are particularly easy to understand, but, I mean, well, not the apologies. I meant the lying part. You've said that people with low self-esteem tend to lie a bunch?
Because I think so many of us, and I've gotten emails from readers who this really resonated with them also. Oh, that's me, they said. It's this. Because we are so ashamed of our true selves. We're so ashamed of revealing. Of course, we aren't really that aware of our true selves because we've buried it under all this hatred. But we are so afraid of revealing anything about ourselves that people might dislike, mock, criticize, judge harshly, that we are chronically hiding it. And so we will just say things that come to our minds that sound good because we want to sound good. Those things are not true for us, but we will say them, thus they're lies. We do lie a lot in public and even to ourselves, but in order to sound better than we think we really are.
Annalee Rufus, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. We ruin our own fun, you write, of people with low self-esteem. How?
I think because we are so certain that it's going to be punctured very soon in a horrible way, because we are so certain that we don't deserve it. So many of these things are so deeply rooted in our belief that we don't deserve anything good because we are a bad person. Now, in my particular case, a lot of my low self-esteem came from my mother, because she had such low self-esteem. And I, as an only child who really identified strongly with this hero in my life, that's who I learned from. And one of her main things was, if something good is happening, watch out, because it is going to be taken away from you. You're enjoying your meal? We ate too much. We're pigs. We're going to be fat. You're having a good time at the party? Someone over there is making fun of you right now. They're making fun of your teeth or what you're wearing. It's impossible for people with high self-esteem or even medium self-esteem to really understand this and what torment it is. Because, you know, fun sneaks up on us. And oh, hey, we're having fun. It's a spontaneous thing. You can plan to have fun, but often it just comes to you. You're having a good time with people or alone. But this insidious thing that self-loathing does is like, oh, fun? You don't get to keep that. And it's so depressing. And when you're accustomed to that, you don't even want to put yourself in a potentially fun situation. And it's all subconscious. You don't even realize how much you're avoiding, because you really are avoiding this fear of suffering.
So, Annalee, where do you trace this back in your mother? I mean, does this come from a religious background or families of alcoholics? I mean, any one of a number of different ways that can produce people who apparently, like herself, had low self-esteem. What was her story?
Right. In our case, it wasn't religion and it wasn't alcohol, although I've heard from people who definitely it was that in their families. In her case, she was overweight as a child. In those days, the 30s, people were not so forgiving of the plus-sized child, and people were not taught in school to be tolerant of their classmates who looked different. And so she was ridiculed and tormented, and her family spent summers on the beach, and she was just the fat kid, the beached whale, and she never, ever got over that. That was alive in her mind till the end of her days. And she lived to be 83, and that is a long, long time to keep hating yourself. And when watching her, the end of her life, and seeing that she still felt that way, I thought, I can't spend the rest of my life this way, and I can't let other people, you know, if I can do anything, write anything, say anything, to keep other people from spending 84 years trapped in the prison of self-loathing, I'm going to have to find a way to do it.
So in writing Unworthy, are you trying to catapult people into the self-esteem sphere?
Not so much. Just literally what the subtitle says, to get them to stop hating themselves.
So less a positive than perhaps just a not negative.
You know, yes, because I'm coming from that side of things. And I'm not a therapist. I'm not qualified to really, you know, let's do this strategy, let's do that strategy. And I do know what works for me, and I know thus what will work for others. And readers have told me that it is working for them. But it means literally taking things very small. I think some professionals who don't have low self-esteem, never had low self-esteem themselves, and who want good results, think too big. And they have people, young people, grown-up people, doing things like making me flags with pictures of themselves and talking about, you know, the republic of me. It's too hard. For people who are coming from the severe low end, it's just too impossible. It feels ridiculous and clownish. We really need to do the tiny, small things. And people have said to me, how can you love someone with low self-esteem? Are you people even lovable? And I'll tell you, it's hard, because we don't believe the nice things you say. And the nicer they are, the less we're going to believe them. You can ask my husband about it. And I remember sitting on a curb with him when I first met him, when we were 19 years old, and he said to me, why can't you just let me love you? And he didn't understand. He didn't have low self-esteem. He didn't know what it was like. But I've heard from so many other people with similar situations, and I say, if you want to love someone with low self-esteem, give them tiny, realistic compliments to start with. Hey, that was a funny thing you said. Hey, cool scarf. I mean, things that seem almost trivial, but you know, hey, I can believe that.
But real specific, as opposed to general, like, you're wonderful.
Yeah. You are beautiful. No, what do you want? I don't believe you.
The book is called Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. Annalee Rufus is its author and our guest, and as she's pointed out, not a trained therapist. But you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the pathway to self-esteem from not having very much of it, which was certainly her life story. 800-838-3760 around the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You point out in Unworthy, Annalee, that self-esteem is a fairly recent concept. What led to its flowering from what you've been able to find out?
It is a luxury in a way, because as you said earlier in the show, Jeff, our ancestors didn't have time to think about how they felt about themselves, because, you know, they had to survive plagues and build barns. So it's a luxury for us. In the 1960s, it became, the whole self-awareness became more of a thing in psychology that people talked about, and psychology itself became more mainstream. And it was started to be a thing. Then, in the mid-1980s, there was a California politician named John Vasconcelos who died recently, and he was in therapy for low self-esteem, and it occurred to him that low self-esteem was the reason that kids were having trouble in schools, and there was such a high dropout rate, and there was so much teen pregnancy and teenage addiction, and the key would be to make self-esteem-raising strategies a major thing in California curriculum, and that would make kids feel better about themselves, and they would all do better on tests and not get pregnant at 14 and all this stuff. He was successful in instituting a self-esteem movement, not just in California, but it went nationwide, and it did become a massive, massive project in schools, public schools, nationwide. Did it work? Some would argue that it worked too well, and now we have generation of millennials and younger who have what is called fragile self-esteem, which is high self-esteem not based on merit, just based on being told you're great, you're special, you're a snowflake, and being given a prize even if they didn't win the tournament. This makes you fragile in the sense that you cannot handle criticism because you've never heard it, and what is this? And studies show, as I discuss in Unworthy, studies show that millennials are, with high self-esteem, are more likely to be prejudiced, intolerant, elitist, violent, all these strange things that you would not normally associate with high self-esteem. But these are fascinating studies, and they're recent studies.
And there's a portion of the book, too, where you talk about the upside. It's chapter 4, the upside of low self-esteem. And you start out with a description of somebody I assume is a millennial. It's a young woman you saw on the train with unflattering clothes and a potty mouth. I mean, was this a true story?
It is. And because I ride public transit, because with my low self-esteem, I'm afraid to drive. it's actually true. But I do see a lot of people, and as a person with low self-esteem for many years, I would see people and think, where did you get your high self-esteem? It's not fair. Not for me to say whether it's fair or not, but yeah, and so I did overhear someone that I thought was it's like I was hearing my mother's voice in my head, you know, young lady, do you know how that outfit looks on you? But it was true. And she was just kind of saying, screw that professor, I can't believe he gave me a B. I'm going to stomp in there and demand an A. And I thought, wow, who does that? But then, you know, yeah, this is high self-esteem in action, and I'm not sure that young lady didn't deserve her B.
But you can certainly see a downside to people who wander around thinking that they self-esteem leads to a sense of entitlement. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, low self-esteem is no picnic, but super high self-esteem that's not based on reality is those people are going to suffer too sooner or later. They're going to get out of school. Everyone is now looking for jobs and think that they deserve to be the vice president of the company the first week after they get hired, and they're not going to be, and they're not going to understand that, and that's going to be painful for them.
Annalee Rufus, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. The variety of circumstances that lead to low self-esteem, it seems like there's a great variety here.
Yeah. Now, again, developmental psychologists say that human beings are not capable of the self-awareness that creates high or low self-esteem until we're about 3. And that's when we start recognizing ourselves as ourselves in mirrors and talking about our current and past behaviors. Before that, we're infants, and human infants, they say, are bent so strongly on survival that we don't have this again, luxury of, how do I feel about myself? But after age 3 or so, when we're interacting with others, we're very, very vulnerable to what they say. Some of us are more vulnerable than others. Now, science has not found a self-esteem gene the way it's found like a diabetes gene, an obesity gene. But if you read the science about MRIs and brain technology, it's pretty clear that we are not born blank slates and we are born with some aspects of our personalities intact. It's arguable that some of these aspects of our personalities that we're born with could be hypersensitivity to criticism, hypervulnerability to competition, perfectionism, things that are factors that lead to low self-esteem. So anecdotally, as far as individuals in their life, you know, terrible abuse could, you know, mild abuse, verbal abuse could, in any person, especially a really sensitive, vulnerable person, could cause low self-esteem. Being a victim to some kind of prejudice, whether homophobia, sexism, racism at an early age or any age could make you start to doubt yourself. Getting into school and then being the kid that's mocked all the time, bullied, there you go, that's a big one. And anything, but at any point in life. Of course, I always think of it starting at a young age, but I've met people who had fine self-esteem until they got into that one bad relationship as an adult that trashed them. And so, you know, you just always have to be on your guard. It's we're in a crowded world, and people are out there, and some of them are going to have power over us. Self-esteem comes from people misusing their power over us generally. It's someone who controls our lives saying, you can't be that way that you are. I don't approve of it. I don't like it. And then you believe them.
You say there's no genetic, there's no gene for self-esteem, high or low, but there is something about genetic makeup that allows the acceptance of oxytocin, the bonding or the feel-good hormone. Is that what you're saying in the book?
There was a UCLA study where they're just kind of verging on trying to find a self-esteem gene. If they're going to find one, it's going to probably start with that one. I don't have the details in front of me, but yeah, it involves oxytocin, which is the happiness hormone, and how it moves in people with different levels of self-esteem.
All right, so that's good to know. There is no self-loathing gene, is what you're saying.
No, just sensitivities and vulnerabilities.
All right, and of course, you know, we talk about people who come out, you know, parents who will say, well, my son was just born angry, you know, so this idea of the personality being at least somewhat formed as your first coming out certainly has lots of merit to it. We'll talk more to Annalee Rufus about her book, Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. You can join the conversation as well. We'll come back with Annalee and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Annalee Rufus, a widely published journalist, several awards to her credit, the author of 11 books, including now Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. It's a really interesting look at self-esteem and how people like Annalee, who spent most of her life with low self-esteem, analyze it and be able to do something about it. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Key quote in the book that I wanted to make sure we got up verbatim here. The good news is that the you hate is not the real you. What does that mean, Annalee?
I think that when the people who have power over us, usually early in life, are telling us, you can't do this, you can't be this, you can't do that, we do bury these things about ourselves that we were told were unacceptable. And then we spend our self-loathing years acting like we think we are expected to like by others. So we have hidden these true things about ourselves because we want to protect them and because we've been told that they're bad and wrong. So I think my theory is that once we start our recovery out of self-loathing, we reacquaint ourselves with those true things about ourselves that we long ago hid for their own protection and out of fear. And this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's like, whoa, suddenly you can settle down with this thing about yourself. You know what? I used to like wearing clown costumes. Why? Not me, but, you know, some people. Why was that? What was that? And then whole worlds open up to you. I used to love reading books about snowy, icy places on Earth. Why? What was that? And why was I told that that was wrong? You know, and these are kind of silly examples, but each person has their own story. And sometimes the silly things turn out to be something really important, really important.
Something that is the core of you, really, and yes. You're denying that, yeah.
And so, okay, yeah, whoa, I don't hate this person. I'm going to give this person a chance. A little quietly, by myself at first, I'm going to explore this person that I have abandoned because I was told to do so long ago, and I'm going to meet this person again.
Can we assume, Annalee, that low self-esteem is something of a feedback loop? And if that's a fair assumption, that is also then what probably prevents a lot of people from seeking assistance with pulling out of it?
Absolutely, because self-loathing makes you think it's true, makes you think you deserve it and that it's real. And that is the number one truth about self-loathing is that it's a myth, it's a shared delusion that we don't know is a delusion. And we are walking around deluded. I think I'm ugly. I think I'm fat. I think I'm stupid. I think I can't, nobody likes me. I think everyone's making fun of me. You know, the paranoia, the self-abuse. And because we think it's real, I mean, I'm thinking of my mother, but I'm thinking of me. As if you couldn't have talked either one of us out of these things. Because of that, we're not going to walk into some therapist's office. I mean, although I have, but, you know, on the road to recovery. But we're not going to say, you know what, that might be a bunch of BS. It is very hard to shake our conviction that it's true.
Let us take a call. Here's Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Annalee Rufus, the author of Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself.
Yeah, hi. What a great program. Annalee, I think your book is absolutely brilliant. I went online and did some searching within, and you have some intriguing insights that I think because of your perspective of not being a therapist, just being a real astute observer, kind of add validity and veracity to what you're saying.
Thank you.
I grew up with a similar kind of mother. She probably had the lowest self-esteem of anybody I've ever met in my life. And oh, now I'm trying to think what it was. The one thing I haven't heard you talk about is the role of early attachment. I think that in addition to all the things that you've listed as causes of self-esteem and as obstacles to overcoming self-esteem, I think a lot of it goes back to the very early experience of either insecure or secure attachment, which kind of sets a cast for the person's whole life or their default position. If you grew up with insecure attachment, it's extremely hard to believe that the world is a safe place.
That's true. And in the book, I do talk about the British therapist John Bowlby and his theories about attachment in infancy even, where if his theories were that if your caregiver, when you're an infant, looks surly or angry or impatient or, you know, mean-faced, you will internalize this as a baby in diapers, and that sets you on a path for life that's very hard to shake. That is in the book, and it's tragic because, you know, A, you're an infant. You don't know any better. You can't defend against this. You can't reason your way out of it and go, oh, well, she's just having an off day. And the caregiver often doesn't know they're doing it. They are having an off day, and they don't realize how it might be affecting the infant.
You know, one of the things when we get into the list of traits associated with low self-esteem, we've talked about lying and apologies and deflecting of the praise. Stuck in the past, that's an interesting one, particularly when the past, certainly in your case, was fairly painful.
That's one of the reasons we can't let go of it. We're afraid to look forward because the future is we're going to screw up. What are we going to do wrong next? It's going to be something. We don't know what. And the past, we're just constantly going over and over our past errors. I had a friend who is no longer in this world, largely because of her low self-esteem, who would avoid whole sectors of our town and take circuitous routes through it to avoid places where a bad thing had happened. Not a thing that you would think would be hugely traumatic, not like an assault, but a bad job interview that went wrong. A clerk in a shop that gave her what she thought was a mean look. She would, her past, her fixation on this was a terrible day, that was a terrible day, affected her current life in that she made herself suffer by having to take miles out of her way to avoid, I don't want to see that building where the clerk looked at me. You know, we do things like that where the past becomes this annals of misery that we keep having to reread and reread. And someone like my husband, who has decent normal self-esteem, will say, let it go. Who cares? The past is over. Stop staring out the rearview mirror like you're tied to it. Look through the front window. That's where stuff is happening. But to look out the front window, which is, he's right, it's true. The current present and the future is where it's at. We need to let go of our deep, deep fear of making mistakes. Like, we aren't human, and everyone doesn't make mistakes.
I want to thank Sandy for his previous call. Here's Gene in Central Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Annalee Rufus, the author of Unworthy.
Hi. First of all, I want to say, Annalee, I am just really looking forward to buying your book because you sound like you're describing me to a T.
Sorry.
When you said you didn't learn to drive, I didn't learn to drive till I was 38 because I knew I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't get my bachelor's degree till I was 55 because I didn't think I could do it. And then I, you know, graduated with a 4.0 and went on to master's. But my question for you is, can people with low self-esteem sometimes accomplish something that you would think a person of high self-esteem would do and then respond very negatively to it rather than having it, you know, produce something more positive? For instance, I give workshops and retreats, and I always, you know, get people telling me how wonderful they are, and then I go home and I cry for hours because I think I did a horrible job.
Well, yeah, because again, it's so hard for us to believe compliments. It's so hard for us to accept praise. We have this this thing inside us where we think, they're lying. Why are they lying? They're tricking me. I'm a fool. Why did I believe them? It's painful to have believed it for one split second because, no, that joy is going to be taken away from me. I'm going to see the laughing man behind the curtain who's making fun of me. And that, because we're tormenting ourselves, that's an example of not being able to accept our own, quote-unquote, fun. Also, because we keep setting the bar higher. We'll do a great accomplishment. You'll win the contest. You'll get that master's degree. You'll teach the great workshop. And then as soon as it's over, you'll think, damn it, I don't know, that wasn't good enough. Next time I got to do XYZ. And you can't even take pride or credit in what your accomplishment was because you've got to set the bar higher.
Gene, thanks for that call, which brings up the point, again, one of the traits here associated with low self-esteem is perfectionists.
Yeah.
But also believe the worst about other people in addition to yourself, which leads me to believe these people would actually be fairly effective at things like journalism, where you're going to be a skeptic anyway, and editing, because you want to make sure that there are no mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's certain professions that lend themselves really well. and acting, because you don't have to be yourself.
Ah.
Performing, you're on a stage. No one's asking who the real you is. You're playing roles. So that is interesting. And it's odd because you'd think, well, a person with low self-esteem, why would they be a perfectionist? Wouldn't they be like a chronic screw-up? Some of them are. And yeah, it's sad but true. The screw-up in the family, the anti-perfectionist, that person has low self-esteem too. But it is weird how self-loathing, well, I have to be really, really good and better than good and better than good because I have so far to go because I have to overcompensate for all my huge, giant, huge flaws that other people don't have, and that's so I'm a perfectionist. I have to be the best at whatever it is.
There is a chapter with seven healing strategies in Unworthy. Find your place is the first one. Break out of your inner prison. Number three is interesting. Adopt yourself. How does that mean?
Well, in the sense of go back to that time. Go back as far as you can to that time when your low self-esteem was starting to happen. The time before, there's a transitional moment when you were still your old self. Go back there, watch the thing happening, the trauma happening that stole your self-esteem, and say, okay, I have compassion for that poor person, me, and I'm seeing that poor person now as a competent outsider, and I'm going to talk to that poor little person or big person, And I'm going to tell them the truth now because they didn't have enough reasoning skills back then to talk their way out of that pain, and I'm going to do it for them now.
Well, and then of course the final chapter is about how healing takes time, which brings up the question: if a person with low self-esteem is convinced that things are, I mean, kind of an Eeyore attitude about a lot of things, this is a really hard one, I would think. It's like, well, I went to therapy and it's not working.
It's really hard, especially in a culture like ours that's very instantaneity oriented. It's like they want the magic cure overnight. Why isn't this working? And so yeah, all I can say is it's the little things. It's the little things. The 3 minutes that you spend, say, studying a foreign language or looking at a wonderful movie or talking to someone or taking care of animals, that you spend doing that instead of loathing yourself, you can look back on and say, whoa, that was 3 minutes I didn't spend loathing myself. And like the next day, it might be 10 minutes. And it is for a person who is coming from abject self-loathing, the tiny things, actually, you can feel them. You can really appreciate. So it is, like they say in AA, you know, it is one step at a time. It is one hour at a time, 1 minute at a time. Whoa, 1 minute that you spend not internally abusing yourself is like a paradise minute.
But for you personally, on your road to recovery, at some point, did the guilt come back in? It's like, well, now I'm spending too much time thinking about myself. And
yes, it is. It's a constant struggle, and you're constantly having to wrestle with these old, old habits and the inner voice. You can't silence that inner voice overnight. It's constantly going to be saying, oh, you screwed up that time. It might be saying that to you for the rest of your life, but at least you can gain the tools to talk back to it and make it talk less. You know, the problem is, I don't think there is a magic 100% black and white cure for self-loathing. I don't. And I haven't found it. It'd be great if there is. But what there is getting better. There is a road, and we can get on that road. There are so many of us. That's the thing. The thing about self-loathing is you think you're alone. you think you are a terrible person and nobody will ever like you. But the fact is, you only think you're a terrible person, and guess what? So do millions of other people, including beautiful, famous ones. We're all on this same road, and it is literally step by step, but each step, actually, you can feel it.
You do mention the birth of AA in the book, a case where people got together and went, oh, I feel that too. So that, I mean, obviously getting to know other people who have the same issue will potentially give you some help through this. I want to come to one of the healing strategies in here. Realize you're a master craftsman. What does that mean?
The fact is, you have things that you are good at. Everyone has these signature strengths. And what is it? Oh, it might be being funny. It might be being caring and being a good listener. It might be actually just being a fair, having a great sense of fairness. It might be something huge. It might be something small. But think about six or seven of these things that you have to admit, even in your self-loathing. You know, I'm okay at this. I'm pretty good at this. Keep reminding yourself about those things and find a way to get those things into your daily routine somehow. And then you're getting back in touch with that real self that you really are, that you've sublimated. And then, you know what? I see the good qualities of this individual that I'm coming to meet.
You mentioned that the book was a little dark for the editors the first time around. You certainly got it right this time, because there's a lot of stuff that makes you giggle and chuckle and even laugh out loud while you're learning a whole lot about low self-esteem. The book is called Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself. Annalee Rufus, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good to have you.